Let's open our Bibles back up to Genesis chapter number 19 with the story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Right now, we're looking at things that are happening at the home of Lot, the nephew of Abraham, and how he is the one that took in the two angels of God, incognito angels, when they showed up there to do God's will of bringing judgment. Now, Lot did take them into his house because, honestly, he was afraid for their safety outside of his house. And even in his house, it turns out they weren't really all that safe, because after the sun has gone down, here comes all of the men of Sodom wanting to have sexual relationships with these two new faces. And Lot tries to talk them out of it. Now, he makes some very stupid comments, offering his two virgin daughters in order to protect these was not his finest moment by any stretch of the imagination. Let's suffice it to say, even some of the best believers, when they find themselves in the middle of a panic situation, will sometimes do and say stupid things. And so let's chalk it up to stupidity for the moment. But in verse number 9 of chapter 19, this is where we get to the crisis point. So he's standing out in the front of his house, outside the door, trying to barricade the way into his property. And he's trying to convince them to do the right thing. That is, don't harm these guests of mine. Verse number 9, they said, stand back. And then they said, this fellow came to sojourn, and he's become the judge. Now we're going to deal worse with you than with them. So there's a conversation going back and forth about how here's this guy that moved in a few years back, and now he thinks he's better than us, that he can decide what's good and bad and what we should or shouldn't do in our own city. You know what, dude? We're going to hurt you worse than what we were going to do to them. And then they pressed hard against the man, Lot, and drew near to break the door down. But the men, and that's a reference to the two angels, reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them, and then they shut the door. And then they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they wore themselves out groping for the door. Which might show you just how horribly sinful these guys are. Even after they've lost their physical sight, they are so rabidly caught up in this idea that they've got to get Lot. They've got to get through this door. They've got to get into this building and get these two new guys and use them sexually. They won't let go even after they lose the sight. That's some bad situation in your heart when you cannot let it go even at that point. And now it's time for them to leave. Some time has passed. Hopefully the crowd outside is dissipated as they figured out they couldn't find the door. They went elsewhere to probably worry about the fact that they can't see. That'll be the least of their worries before too much longer. So as we get closer to dawn, this happens next. Then the men said to Lot, have you anyone else here? Sons-in-law? Sons? Daughters? Or anyone you have in the city, bring them out of the place. Now, we do not know all the details of Lot's life since he left Abraham. He may have had other children besides the two daughters we're about to meet. It could be that he might have had another son or two. Maybe. The sons-in-law thing here is about anyone that is going to be engaged to his two daughters. So the angels are effectively saying, if you've got anybody else that you want to leave with you, you better get them with you right now. Why? Verse 13. For we are about to destroy this place because the outcry against its people has become great before he who is, and he who is has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out and said to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters. Now this feels funny to us in English because that's not the way we think about things. You're not a son-in-law in our mind until the actual marriage ceremony has happened. But back in the ancient time, you were a son-in-law once the marriage was contracted to happen. So there are marriage contracts in place for his two daughters, but they have not yet become officially married. That's why they're still living at home. So he effectively goes out and talks to the two boyfriends, the two fiancés. Says, up, get out of this place, for he who is about to destroy the city. But it seemed to his sons-in-law to be jesting. So he shows up in the wee hours of the morning, telling them they've got to get out of town with him because his God, the God that he worships, is going to destroy the whole place because of its sin. They think he's joking, so they blow him off, and that seals their fate. As morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife, your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city. So it is now time. They have to leave. It's sunrise, and judgment is coming. But he lingers. He doesn't really want to leave because this has been his home for quite a few years. It's possible, although not guaranteed, that his wife may be from here or nearby here, and so it might be her town. So because he's not quick to move, the angels, under the direction of God, because it's God's mercy that's forcing him out of this city at this exact moment. The two men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, and he who is being merciful to him, they brought him out and set him outside the city. So they effectively brought him by the hand out of the city of Sodom. And as they brought them out, one said, escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the hills, lest you be swept away. Keep in mind again, my belief that Sodom, Gomorrah, Zeboim, Admah, and then Bela, which is going to be the only one that survives all this, the city is going to be called Zoar. These five cities were the major cities of the Valley of Siddim, the Valley of Cultivated Fields, which is what the Jordan Valley looked like back in the time of Abraham and Lot. It was like the Garden of Eden. It was like the Nile Delta Valley. So it was completely different than what it looks like today. And I think at least Sodom and Gomorrah must have been right around where the north basin of the Dead Sea is today. I actually think that that is all a catastrophe zone that was caused because of this. Now, I know when you go and read all of the evolutionary-based materials, they'll tell you that the Gore was formed millions of years ago by plate tectonics and things like this. I agree that it probably was plate tectonics and stuff that were involved in it. I just don't think it as far back in history as they make it out to be. I think this is where it happened. And they are being told to go into the hills. Now, since they're down in a valley, a very long valley, the hills that could be having in mind would be the ones to the west, which would be the hills of Hebron, or the ones to the east, which is going to be eventually the hills of Moab. And since Moab is going to be coming out of this story soon, I think that's the direction that they were being encouraged to head, is off to the east. But Lot said to them, "Oh no, my lords. Behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. You've shown me great kindness in saving my life, but I cannot escape to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me and I die." So, more than likely, and again, this is my speculation, more than likely, he's been taken out to the south and east of the city of Sodom, and that's taking him into the direction of a city that at this time was called Bela. And I think Bela was more than likely the southernmost city of the five. And so he is afraid to try to go up into the eastern hills. He would rather follow the road south, maybe southeast, to Bela and hide out there because he'll be able to travel faster over a developed path like that than an undeveloped path, maybe going up a wadi, a wet weather stream into the hills to the east. So he makes a bargain. Verse 20, "Behold, this city is near enough to flee to. It's a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And then my life will be saved." And he said to him, "Behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. Escape there quickly, for I can do nothing till you arrive there. And therefore, the name of that city is now called Zoar." And Zoar means insignificant, or, as he'd been saying, kind of little. So this is part of the grace of God, that even though he does not spare the entirety of the five city population, because there's not even 10 righteous people there, because of the request of Lot to be able to go to the smallest of the five cities to escape the destruction of the other four, God spares that city. And you can actually see the place, according to different archaeological claims and even ancient history claims, where Zoar was located. It's off to the south and east corner of the ancient Dead Sea. Now, I wonder whether or not that site is actually the restart of a site that might have been a little higher up on the plateau. But that's just me wondering out loud about that. Because what happens next changes the geography quite a bit of the region. I really do believe that the entire Jordan Valley, from just north of the Sea of Galilee all the way down, halfway from the Dead Sea down to the Gulf of Aqaba, was a nice, gently sloped valley, all of it above sea level, and that it was well-watered and well-cultivated and a prime area for agriculture and the mining of bitumen, which is a petroleum product. Effectively, There was so much petroleum under the ground in this area that it was seeping up in open pits and being harvested. And I think that might have been the mechanism by which God executes his plan of judgment. So the sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar. So he's exactly where God said that he could be before it started. And then he who is rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, sulfur and fire from he who is out of heaven. And he overthrew. He turned upside down. It's in Greek, in the Greek Old Testament, he caused a catastrophe. This was a complete change of the area. And my speculation, and all it's worth is my speculation, is that all of the petroleum in this region of the Middle East was suddenly ignited. Perhaps it began to spew out under pressure and was ignited, and it starts falling down on the cities in a great deal of very sticky tar fireballs. A lot of sulfur would be involved in this as well. And so this is all happening as the entire floor of the valley collapses as all of this stuff goes out from underneath it. And I speculate on more than one occasion, this might be why Israel is one of the few places in the Middle East that doesn't have huge oil reserves underneath it, is because all of that was burned off in this great big catastrophic event. But when you look at the result, you can see that there's a great drop-off on both sides of the valley. Opposite sides, roughly the same height above sea level, then boom, they go way down. At the area of the Dead Sea, the surface area is, I think, about 1,400 feet below sea level. So that's a huge drop that happened. And it burned the whole place up. It changed the climate of the valley. Even to this day, it is very dry there. If you happen to be one of those that goes on a trip to Israel with me, or maybe you've already been there yourself, you know this is some very, very desolate territory. Even with irrigation in a lot of their fields and things, it's still very, very desolate. So this is the destruction of the cities of the plain. And all of the inhabitants of the city and whatever grew on the ground, all of that was overthrown by God because of their sin of selfishness, their sin of non-hospitality to strangers, their sin of sexual deviancy, all of those is what brought the judgment of God. Now, Lot's wife did not make it out, apparently because of her own free will choice. Verse 26 says, "But Lot's wife behind him looked back. She became a pillar of salt." Now, when it says here that she looked back, I don't think it was just a momentary glance. I think she actually was going back. So she ends up being inside the destruction zone. And anything that dies in the Dead Sea area is likely to become encrusted in salt, just because of the atmospheric effects that are there. And so when it talks about her becoming a pillar of salt, don't think of the shape of a pillar. Think of almost like a monument of salt. So she becomes covered in salt. Her corpse does. And even though they've been showing religious tourists from way back, different places that were supposedly the remains of Mrs. Lot. I sincerely doubt that any of that remains to this day. But here is the next thing that we're told. Verse 27. Abraham went up early in the morning to the place where he had stood before He Who Is. So he had said goodbye to God at a very specific spot the day before, in the late afternoon, where he had bargained God down to, if there's only 10 righteous people, you'll spare it, right? And God says, I will. So Abraham gets up early the next morning to go to the exact same spot to probably look down upon the cities of the plain and hope that they would be spared because he had made this arrangement with God, and perhaps his nephew Lot was sufficient enough, him, his family members, maybe a few friends were sufficient enough to have the place spared. Perhaps he went there to pray as well. Instead, he ends up being a witness of the destruction. Verse 28, he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the valley. He looked, and behold, the smoke of the land went up like a smoke of a furnace. So there's smoke just going heavenward all along the Jordan Valley. Excuse me. All along what has become the destruction zone of the cities of the plain. It's nothing but a great big smoking pit now. And this tells him immediately there were not even 10. Not even 10 righteous people. And so God has brought judgment. And at this point, he didn't necessarily know that his nephew was spared, although God might have told him instantly in response to such a wonder, I saved him. He's on the other side of the valley. Verse number 29. So it was, when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had lived. And so now we need to read about what happens in the remainder of Lot's life, or at least a significant part of it. Verse 30, now Lot went up out of Zoar, lived in the hills with his two daughters, for he was afraid to live in Zoar, you know, because God followed through with his judgment on the other four cities. Why wouldn't he do it on Zoar? So he doesn't want to stick around there. So he takes his two girls and he goes and lives in a cave. He lived in a cave with his two daughters. Now, we do not know how long it was before this next event takes place. I suspect it was quite a few years, but I can't prove it. Eventually, the two daughters despair of ever getting married and having children. And this is a horror that they can't deal with because that means their family will die out. So the older of the two girls comes up with a plan. The firstborn said to the younger, our father is old. There's not a man on earth to come in after to us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let's make our father drink wine. We'll lie with him that we may preserve offspring from our father. So she comes up with the suggestion, the only man that we can get pregnant by, apparently, is dad. So we've got to do an act of self-preservation for our family. Let's get dad drunk and then coax him to have sexual relations with us, which they did. Verse 33. So they made their father drink wine that night, And the firstborn went in and lay with her father. He didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. Now, there's been some people try to critique this, saying, if you're that drunk, you can't perform sexually. But there's been research that shows that's not exactly true. You can have a blackout drunk and still be able to perform sexually. And so that seems to be what they do to him. Now, the other thing is, hey, how are these two women being able to have a one-night stand two nights in a row? How's that work with the mechanics of their body? And the answer is, it can happen. One of the things that we know is that when women live in groups, a lot of times their cycles will sync together. And then the other thing is that the women of the ancient world in particular were very sensitive to the rhythms of their body, and they knew when the best possible time for them to get pregnant was by keeping track of their rhythm, of their menstrual cycle. And so they pick these two nights in a row on purpose because it's the most optimal time for them to get pregnant. So the next day, the firstborn said to the younger, behold, I lay last night with my father. Let's make him drink wine tonight also. Then you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve offspring from our father. So made their father drink wine that night also. The younger arose, lay with him. He didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. And thus, both the daughters of Lot became pregnant by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab, which in Hebrew means from daddy. Now, isn't that kind of sick? He is the father of the Moabites to this day. And the land of the Moabites is on that east side of the Dead Sea Valley, exactly where these guys are living. The younger also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi, which means son of my family. Again, a play on the idea that it's coming from the family. And he's the father of the Ammonites to this day. And we'll have more to talk about with those two groups later in our story.